You know, some people try to be holier than the Lord. How can you do that?
And they try real hard.
I asked you to read and be thinking about Mark chapter 2. You know, if you hear people mention the word Sabbath, sometimes people think the Sabbath is a straitjacket to keep us from having any fun. The Sabbath is a straitjacket to make us toe the mark. And yet the scripture says we're to call the Sabbath a delight. Years ago in this land of ours, a working man would sometimes work 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. If you do the math, that's 96 hours. You only have 128 in a week. So, as one old country song said, when the Sabbath rolls around, we're just tired, too tired to really sleep, try to catch up. It is a day of rest, but that doesn't mean sitting in front of the TV, man. That's it. I had somebody once say, well, I would come to church on Sunday, but I observe the Sabbath. Well, the Lord said, you have 6 days for this. Now, 150 years ago, most working folks didn't say, oh, the Sabbath again. Man, I was looking forward to work. You know, if you work 6 days and then the seventh day, and then six more days and the seventh day, you know, all work and all play. No play, no real relaxation. Your body is geared for rest. You gotta sleep. If you might be go, 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 and then finally the Lord puts you down, the Lord will enforce what He knows and what He has for you. We are to call it a delight. Now, with God's approval, what can you do on the Sabbath? There are basically three things. Number one, you can worship. You should, if it's something you can do, if you're able to do it. If you're not, as we say, providentially hindered, we should rejoice to be in the Lord's house. It is a day to honor the Lord. Not grandma, not your buddies, not your fellow workers, or yourself. We call it the Lord's Day. Well, the Lord's made every day, but this is the one day He says, you need to earmark this day. And the priority for God's people should be to worship. However, you can do a work of necessity. Now, let's just suppose you got something going on. You've locked the house, and you just pull out the driveway and you turn, oh look, the house is on fire. Well, it's a Sabbath. I sure hope something happened between that. Now, come Monday morning, I guess I can put it out. The Lord said, you know, you hypocrites, you want to talk about the Sabbath, and yet your ox gets in the ditch. Did you, oh, we'll have to wait till tomorrow. Get him out of the ditch. No, you get him out. Now, I heard somebody was trying to make Ms. Linda be a banjo. He wanted to pick on her. But if your ox gets in the ditch, or your dog gets out of the fence, you're going to, well, I'll just trust the Lord. The Lord gave you good sense. Gave you a lot more sense of that dog and that ox. You have an emergency. Deal with it. God will understand. Maybe some folks won't. There are some people, they have the idea that God made the Sabbath and then He made folks. And the reason we have folks is so we have somebody to fit in these little cubby holes and do this, that, and the other. It's the other way around. Well, what's the other thing you can do? You can do an act of worship. You can do an act of emergency and necessity. Now, I wouldn't push the ox in the ditch myself and say, well, Lord, my ox is in the ditch. Don't set yourself up for what you say. I have to do such and such. But you can also do an act of kindness. Jesus himself, when a man came to him, needed healing. The Lord says, come back tomorrow, we'll talk. This is the Sabbath. I don't violate the Sabbath. I have enough. No. The Lord healed the fellow. And you know, those Jews came to him, you violated the Sabbath. Hard workers, that's working. You shouldn't be working on the Sabbath. The Lord said, well, let me ask you, is it better to heal on the Sabbath or to kill? They would, if they happened to kill Jesus, they wouldn't care what day of the week it was. Just get him dead. Get him out of the way. A man told me about a little gal. She was a widow, and she couldn't do much anything. And somebody found out that the city was going to come on Monday. And they're going to mow her grass at great expense. It's going to cost a big chunk of change. And they knew she didn't have that kind of money. And they knew one thing might lead to another, and she had a calamity. But she was a strict Sabbath observer. To the point when, at the service, the pastor said, by the way, gentlemen, we have a sister in need. That grass isn't cut by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. They're going to come and cut it and charge her an exorbitant price. I think some of us will have opportunity this afternoon. So they came over with mowers and clippers and weed eaters. And they got to work. And she's in her house and she came out and said, what is it you're doing? Go home! It's the Sabbath! Well, they knew what day of the week it was. But they saw an opportunity. I lived in a little town in West Tennessee. And come Sunday morning, everything was closed. Except the churches. And the police station. I'm kind of glad the police station was open. And the firehouse. And the hospital. I think everything else in the town besides the churches was closed for the day. It used to be you go into a place and it said the day is more important than the dollar. I can appreciate that. But why did the Lord give the Sabbath? Well, let's read from Mark 2, verses 23 to 28. This is Jesus, of course. It came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day. Now, they didn't have McDonald's. So, if you're out in the open, you see a field and you can pull and eat right there. And his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. And come the fellows. And the Pharisees said, behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? The Lord didn't say, shame on you guys. You'd be better off just starving today. The Lord didn't say that. Now, if anybody else had said these words, I might hesitate. If you heard this just from some preacher someplace, you might say, I don't know. I'm not convinced, but this is Jesus Christ himself. And he said, have you never heard what David did when he had need and wasn't hungered, he and they that were with him? How he went into the house of God. He went into the tabernacle in the days of Abiathar the high priest and did eat the showbread. This is supposed to be just for the priest. But David had some hungry men. And he showed up and he said, I need to feed my men. And some of them might have, oh, heavens to Betsy, or some other expression they might have said. No, David went in and he took care of the need. They eat the showbread, which is not lawfully, but for the priest. Hold on, the priest! Supposed to eat this. These guys weren't priests, but they ate. And gave also to them which were with him. He ate, and he gave to others. Now, the lesson we should take from that is exactly what Jesus says here. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Let's not, as one fellow said, get the cart in front of the horse. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. I want you to know that God has some principles in His Word. We need to keep them in mind. Sometimes we fixate on things, objects. Sometimes we have pet ideas about whatever. But God made us, we are complex folks. Did you know that? Every one of us has a brain that has thoughts going through it. And some we need to act on, some we need to say, be quiet. Every thought needs to be captive to the Lord. And sometimes people have preconceived notions about this, that, the other. Evidently, this Pharisees did. Jesus said, there are circumstances. People are more important than things. The Sabbath is a thing given by a loving God, not to harangue or harass, but to help us to keep things in perspective. God would have us to view things from His perspective. We're down here someplace. This is how we think. This is how we behave. God is way up there, higher than the ceiling, higher than the tip top of the roof, higher than the clouds. Isaiah 55 is, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. My ways than your ways. Several years ago, back when I was in another state, in another century, I was talking about something. I was pretty serious about it. Most of the students seemed serious about it. And you never know what's going on inside somebody's mind until they tell on themselves. And this one young lady, I was talking about some pretty serious stuff. Most of the students, they're listening. And she's sitting back grinning. And I'm thinking, I just don't think I said anything funny. And she just got more and more excited. And finally, she couldn't contain herself. She says, I just had a thought. And I thought, I'm getting through to her. She said, if my dad died, I'd get his truck. And the other students, they did the face palm and others. You'd like to think people are listening. You'd like to think that the things of God are going to sink in. Jesus in the Gospel of Luke said, let these things sink down into your ears. He was talking about, we're going to Jerusalem, and I'm going to be taken, I'm being crucified, and they either weren't listening, or they were thinking about what was in it for me. And the Lord slaps us in the face with who He is and what He's about. On one occasion, He sent some disciples out. And He said, I want you to go preach. I want you to do my bidding. And they came back and said, you know what? Even the demons are subject to what we say. It can be a heady thing when you're serving the Lord. Jesus didn't say, feels good, doesn't it? Yeah. Now you know what power. You guys came with me and you ain't seen nothing yet. No! That's not what the Lord said. He said, don't rejoice in that stuff. You know, it's a, look what I did. I'm really some money. He said, rejoice that your names are written in heaven. Sometimes we get the big head. One day Jesus walked on the water in the Sea of Galilee. And here's Peter in the boat. And you know the story how Peter got out of the boat. And he walked to the Lord. As long as his eyes were on the Lord, he was okay. But he got to listening to the wind and feeling the waves and thinking, what am I doing out here? And immediately began to sink. And of course he said, wait a minute, I need to think a happy thought. And I'll, no! He said, Lord, save me! Lord, pull him up. Now you might have heard that Peter turned around to the others and said, hey guys, at least I got out of the boat. Look what I did. And me and Jesus, we got to know. I think Peter was humble. I've never read what I was just saying. Because that only goes on in the imagination of man. We need an experience from time to time to bring us to the point of realizing I can't do a thing without the Lord. Without me, Jesus said, ye can do nothing. The psalmist in 127 says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain to build it. You go by and you see somebody building a house, they lay the foundation, and they get the plates down, and up come the sides, and the roof, and the electrician, and the plumber, and all these people come. Wow, they're really doing something. Is the Lord helpless? So I didn't really want that to happen. No. The Lord doesn't build the house, they labor in vain to build it. If you hadn't heard, we put some money down on the house yesterday. By the way, if you want to write us, our new address is P.O. Box 143, Mena, Arkansas. Kind of hard for a marsh to be to squeeze in that little box, but we do the best that we can. You ever get a card in the post office box that says resident, occupant? Who lives in that little box? Maybe they got some little munchkins living there. I don't know how that works. I want to give you three reasons real quick this morning why it is that people are more poor than this. Go with me to Romans chapter 10 and verse 10. Now, preachers like to alliterate. I mean, make their thoughts start with the same letter, or make them rhyme, or something like that. And I'll let you know a secret. They don't do that to try to sound smart. They do that so they hopefully will remember. There was another G in there someplace. What's it supposed to be? Well, in this case, we're going to use the letter F. And when you talk about things versus people, let's talk about faith. There are all kinds of things in this world. They can distract you. They can deter you. They can depress you. There are all kinds of things in this world. Look at verse 10. For with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. Who has a heart to believe? Who has a mouth to confess? Not things. I like to have that water bottle, but this water bottle will never believe in Jesus Christ. This microphone will never give conscious testimony of the grace of God. That's something people can do. We are to live by faith. We sing about that, and of course we should live along those lines as well. The Lord commends faith. On one occasion, the Lord had a centurion come to him And the centurion said, "Now, I believe you can heal my servant." And the Lord said, "Well, let's go see about it." And he said, "If you're who I think you are, you don't need to go there. You can speak the word, and it's done." And that's a good example. So much so that the Lord stopped in his tracks, and he turns to Peter, James, and John, and the rest, and he says, "You guys paying attention? We need to pay attention." He said, "I haven't seen this kind of faith." This man comes in and he said, "If you're really who you say you are," you know, some people, they think, "Well, if I get to the church, I can kneel. If I get down on my knees, I can pray." Let me tell you, God is everywhere. And the Lord hears the cries of his desperate, needy people. Now, I've visited people in hospitals, and other times they'll be in need, and they'll say, "Would you pray for me?" I'll be glad to pray with you right here, right now. But let me tell you, I'm just a human being. You cut me, I bleed. I'm just as human as you. And the only thing that's different between me and the worst sin in this world is what the grace of God has done. And if you're honest, you have to say, it's true for you too. We are a needy people. Every breath we draw, it's a gift from God. Every time we blink, every time our heart beats, every opportunity we have. God didn't give faith to inanimate objects, to things, but he has to us. Not only that, things don't have feelings. You get mad at your tractor and kick it. The tractor's not going to say, "Ouch." You take your hand and put your fist, try to put it to the wall. You're going to hurt your knuckles, but you're not going to hurt the wall. Wall's not going to say, "Ouch, don't you dare do that again." We have feelings, not just our physical, but we have feelings on the inside as well. You know, it's interesting, in the 115th Psalm, the psalmist says, the heathen, they have idols. They have eyes they can't see. They have ears they can't hear. They have hands they can't grasp. They have feet they can't walk. They're just something that comes from the imagination of man. We need to know our limitations. And we need to know that things like envy, things like pride, things like fear, things like anger, things like fickleness, all of these things, we need to deal with those feelings. We need to deal with the fact that we have great need, not just on Sunday morning, but every day of the week, every hour of the day, no matter where you are. Now, I've lived in a lot of states. I think we added up once. We've been in 35 states. And in every one of them, there's needy people. I talked to Paul Brown last night. He's in Thailand, halfway around the world. They're just as needy there as we are here. We need the Lord. And we need to be aware of that. And we need to feel after the things of the Lord. And so, we talk about, we have faith, things don't. We have feelings. And let's not think just about today. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3. Man has a future. Things do not. Did you know that? Your prized possession. You might own some land. You might own something else. You might something that is the desire, the envy of a whole lot of folks. And somebody says, "If I could just have that thing, I would be content." Really? Yeah, until the next shiny object comes along, and I want that one too. Reality check. 2 Peter 3, verse 11. You could think about the grandest place to live, you could think of the, about the biggest toy that are out there that you could have. And you might say, well, I would have a ride if I had that. If I had this experience, if I could be done for this, that, and the other. Let me tell you something. Everything you can see with your eyeball, someday it's all going to be gone. If it doesn't die on you, if it doesn't burn up in a natural fire, if it doesn't rust away, even the things that we think are going to last. You know, I think old Lot and his wife, I think they thought, Sodom, this is where it's at. And yet everything he had accumulated, whatever he didn't have on his back or in his bags or whatever, everything that he and his wife and his two daughters had that they could carry, they went out of Sodom. And all that money, all that property, all those other possessions, all that influence that he might have enjoyed among the men and women of Sodom. You know what happened to it? Boom! It went up. Fire and brimstone. That was it. He didn't say, well, we'll come back next week and see if we can rebuild. No! It's all gone! Let me tell you something. It could happen today. It might not come for a long, long time. That's up to the Lord. But this day is coming that I'm telling you about right here. In the 11th verse of chapter 3. Now, he's been talking about the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord. The day of the Lord. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved. You better say goodbye. At least in your mind. There's nothing you can grasp in your hand in this world that can't be taken out of your hand or can't be lost. I had a set of keys when we lived in Citrus Heights. We went over to the park and I came back and I couldn't find the keys in any of my pockets. Went back and we never did find those keys. That was, what, 1978? Somebody might have found them, or they might be buried in the ground somewhere. But they're lost to me. And you might have lost something. Something that you put a lot of stock in. But it's gone. Well, let me tell you what. You lose something here, you lose something there. Well, I can always get another this, another that. But this very world in which we live, it's all going up in smoke. Things are not eternal. But we live. We have a great life. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be? In all holy conversation, that means the way we walk, not the way we talk. And godliness. We need to be part of the solution. You say, you said that before, preacher. Yeah, I did it. I said it a lot. Because it's true. The Lord's not going to change that. So, rules are good to live by. We need to have some state. We need accountability to God. But there's some folks on one extreme, I don't live by any rules. We call those antinomian. You don't want to be that. Because antinomian, in the final analysis, he said, I don't even want God to tell me what to do. So he says, I'm an independent Baptist. That's too independent. You don't have and don't need the Lord. On the other hand, there are people who they fashion their rules and their regulations and their system that they have concocted or bought into. That becomes more important. You know, Peter had a problem. You know, I pick on Peter because I see a lot of beef in Peter. One day, Peter was praying on the rooftop and he got hungry. And while he was up there, the Lord caused a sheet to come. This is in Acts chapter 10, if you want to find it. And the sheet comes down, and it opens up. And being a Jew, he was used to eating lamb and so many things that were considered clean to the Jews. But there weren't any sheep in this thing. There were those nasty, unclean creatures. There might have been snakes in there. There might have been all kinds of creepy eepies, beasts of the field that God told the Hebrews, you don't eat this. I think so. Well, I don't eat that, so therefore I'm going to heaven. No, it doesn't work that way. Because you're going to heaven, you identify yourself. When I was in the U.S. Navy, I didn't wear Army clothes. I didn't wear civilian clothes. And one evening I got up to go to brush my teeth or something, and I was wearing my Navy trousers and non-Navy shirt. I got chewed out. And hey, what's the deal? The deal is you need to identify. Well, we need to identify with the Lord. But sometimes we make a god of our servant. And so here's Peter. While he's up there, he's on the roof, he's hungry, and down comes this sheet that opens up, and it's these nasty, unclean animals. And God tells him, well, you're hungry, aren't you? Take, kill, and eat. And you know, he tried to pull a holiness routine on the Lord. He tried to tell the Lord just how holy he was. So, Lord, I don't eat those nasty, trashy things. They're unclean. The Lord didn't say, oh, I forgot. That was just a test to see if you're a good Jew. No! The Lord said, what I call clean, don't you call common. I got news for you. If you and I could be transported, now, there might be some of you, I don't know much about your ancestry, but I'm going to assume we are all what the Jew would call a Gentile. I know it's true for me. I'm a Heinz 57, like maybe some of you are too. But if we somehow got in a time machine and went back to the days of the Old Testament, and if we're in a crowd, we just happen to rub up against somebody, and they're a Jew, they're going to, oh, I was touched by one of the goyim, one of those nasty heathen people. I got to take off this garment. I got to wash. I got to ask the Lord to keep me from contact with those nasty, trashy. The idea was they're subhuman. And whether you think that about things or as some Jews did about people. And the Lord did that with Peter, not to tell him it's okay, he claimed. The Lord was doing it. In fact, he did it three times with Peter. And finally, Peter says, now I get it. Because down at the door was a Gentile to take him to the home of Cornelius, and he preached the same gospel. And just as there was an outpouring in Acts chapter 2 among many of the Jews, there was an outpouring, and Peter, God's doing a great work with the Gentiles. Ew, those nasty heathen, those unregenerate. Well, they weren't unregenerate. God gave the evidence right there. So, I want you to know that man has a family. And you say, oh, grandma, grandpa, aunt, so on. I'm talking about the family of God. We have a family that's going to be a great family reunion very soon. It's either when you pass or the Lord comes for us. And it'll be greater than any family reunion any of us have ever attended. Things don't have family. We have a heavenly Father. Things don't. They have manufacturers. My parents were not my manufacturers. Yours weren't either. And I want you to know, finally, man has a friend. A friend that sticks closer than a brother. David said, if my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Can you see the Lord as the one who loving? He didn't give rules because he's some kind of meanie. He didn't have an attitude. I'm just doing this to remind you who's in charge. Well, we need to know he's in charge. But he gave us those things because he loves us. He says that in his word. I had more time. got it in my notes. You want to ask me later, that's fine. But the Lord has made it very clear that He knows what's best for us. Our parents told us when they were little, I'm your parent, I'm your mom, I'm your dad, and I know what's best for you. And hopefully, more times than not, they really did. But the Lord knows all the time what is good, what is best for us. And so let's keep in mind, God, even in the giving of the Sabbath, it wasn't to bind us. It was to help us to know that we have our limitations. And we need our great God. There might be an emergence. You have opportunity to worship. This is our place to come. This is our place to, you know, I preach from the pulpit. You preach by your presence. You preach on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We have one of those five-day-a-week jobs. But you have neighbors. You have people you see in the store. You see people in the post office. How do you reflect Christ? Is the beauty of Jesus seen in you? Is it seen in me? Can we rejoice? As Paul said one of them, you are our epistles, known and read of all men. It would be a shame for somebody to go someplace and you're so scowly and so cantankerous. And by the way, I saw you there. What were you doing that Sunday? I was going to church. And they say, you go to church? Tell me which church you go to. I don't want to go to that church. I don't want to believe the Jesus that you think you believe in, because you're not a good proclamation. Paul said, you are our epistles, known and read of all men. May people see us and see beyond. Yes, we have our limitations. You know, Marcia found this suit in the closet, and Dapper Dan. No. The guy in the store said, you're going to like the way you look. I want you to know, I better not take myself too seriously. And you don't take me too seriously either. Don't take yourself too seriously. Now when it comes to the Lord, take Him seriously. Understand that even the Sabbath was given to us for His glory. Don't trash it. Don't use an excuse to do what you want to do. Use it to do what the Lord would have you to do. To be that blessing. To rejoice in Christ Jesus. Put no confidence in the flesh.